We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waters where we're recording from, the Worimi and Wanarua peoples. We acknowledge the Worimi and Wanarua elders, both past and present.
Okay, we're definitely recording.
Who is on the field for the Newcastle Knights? Darren Tracy's first touch of the footy. Now Andrew John. Fights a little hole himself. He's close. Right. He reaches out. That's a try to Andrew John. Roots free from the little halfback. And that's a good reward for a great game in his debut match for the Newcastle Knights in first grade. Andrew John scores the try, and that should wrap it up for the Knights.
Coming to you live from Worimi and Wanneroo Lands, this is the Bay 53 podcast, part of the Sports Best Friends podcasting network, brought to you by your friends Bretto and the K-Dog. Ladies and gentlemen, the NRL Knights men's team are off and running with their first W of the season in a very hard-fought win against the Melbourne Storm in front of a jam-packed crowd on a Sunday evening. There's lots to talk about in rugby league, so there's no better way to talk about it than to listen to your friends Bretto and the K-Dog discuss all things rugby league with a particular focus on our beloved, beautiful, wonderful, delightful, and always maintained faith.
You weren't saying this last week, brother.
No, I wasn't. Look, I'm going to say that we didn't record last week because I was sick, but the reality was I was sick to the heart because of the Newcastle Knights. Anyway, it's good to get a win on the board. It doesn't matter. Sometimes coaches have a tendency to say, oh, you know, it only needs to be 1 point. And in the end, that's sort of how it felt. It was good to get the that first W on the board for season 2024.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. The whole place feels better. But it's funny, isn't it? Last week, I think we played better last week. Lose by a point, disaster. This week, win by two. Everything's rosy.
Mate, we're going to talk a lot more about the Knights. But before we do, I don't know if I've been sort of swayed too much by how I feel about the Knights. But for me, over the weekend, I actually really enjoyed the footy. I know this is easy to say. There's a part of me that sort of would have been happy if we'd lost, because I think I still would have said that I actually just enjoyed watching the Knights game, like the game of rugby league itself. And I've actually enjoyed watching the rugby league over the weekend for a variety of reasons. You know, we've had a lot of blowout scores, but I mean, there was something fascinating about watching the Tigers beating the Sharks. There's something that, you know, you feel like you're watching a car crash in slow motion as you watch the Dragons sort of stumble with the Cowboys. I thought there was a fascination about watching the Rabbitohs capitulate to the Roosters. And of course, there was just something to admire about the way the Panthers deconstructed the Broncos. It was just a fascinating weekend of footy for me.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I've kind of felt that, like, the first three rounds, I wouldn't say it's been sparkling footy. There's been some really interesting stuff, you know, teams not performing expected, teams sort of, you know, finding a way, other teams, you know, in the depths of disaster, but then come out and get a win. It's been a really interesting first 3 weeks.
You look at the table as well, and what I like is that there's only one team that remains undefeated, and there's only one team that remains defeated. So, you know,
there's two. Don't forget the Titans have had a bye, so they're also completely defeated.
Yeah, of course. Well, as I've always said to you, the Titans are completely inconsequential to us. They don't count. But no, you do make a fair point. I guess it's more, there's only one team that's got three wins. There's only one team that's got three losses. So it sort of feels close.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, there have been a couple of tendencies over a few years where you just sort of feel after three rounds, like, right, we know how the rest of the season's going to pan.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the moment, it still feels like there's everything to play for.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what I was leaning to before. It's kind of been really intriguing in the sense that one result can change the whole mindset of a club. Mm. And I reckon about 4 or 5 weeks, I think there'll be two or three teams drop off at the bottom. But I don't think anyone's going to rip away at the top. And that middle, I reckon two wins in a row, you could be sort of jumping from, you know, 13th or 14th up to, you know, 6th or 7th. That's how tight it's going to be.
I want to ask you specifically about the Raiders-Warriors game, if only because I feel like at least at this early part of the season for Knights fans, definitely for you and I, that focus on the Warriors and the Raiders feels the most intense because they were our two finals opponents last year. So I've got to ask you, how did you feel coming out of that match where the Warriors got their first win on the board and they broke the Raiders' unbeaten start to the season?
Yeah, it kind of, well, it did two things. To me, the fact that Canberra went over there and almost got them proved to me that Canberra are pretty good. So it sort of makes our, as much as poor as we were in week one, you know, the better Canberra go, it obviously doesn't make it look quite as bad. It was good to see the Warriors win because I think that they're a bit fragile like us. I think if they'd lost three in a row, they were in a bit of trouble.
This is going to sound weird. I like our chances more because they won against Raiders.
Yeah, absolutely. I would want to go 0-3 going over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, rugby league is nothing if not for the ability of referees to just constantly give you something to talk about. There are three particular instances, one of which we're going to talk about a fair bit later, but I want to... We've been going, mate. You and I have been going crazy in the chat over the past few days, talking about responsibility. I've personally been blowing up about this use of the phrase duty of care. I think a lot of people are using it. I think people are using duty of care like they think they're saying, well, this person has a duty to take care of them, and that's not what that means. But I actually thought Graham Annesley used it very well. There's an obligation. Well, there's a responsibility to be safe. Taylan May, just gun to your head, mate. Quick yes or no answer. Taylan May, should he have been suspended for the hit on Reece Walsh?
Cheetah's tight. Probably yes. But now, can I just make a point? So everyone compared to the Darfanukin getting suspended last year. For me, they're completely different because Fanukin charged out of the line, didn't try anything other than just to run into the bloke, essentially, because his arms were nowhere. They were just flapping in the breeze. They were not the same thing. Taylan May was just trying to get up, put pressure as he's supposed to do. And I think in the modern rules, it's probably suspension because you're right. It's his job to sort of make sure there is no head contact. As much as a head clash is accidental, if you come running up to someone and you run into him and there's a head clash, that's on the defender, and that's been made known now for probably 12 months. But in terms of rugby league, it's a pure accident. I don't think it should be a suspension, but I think under the rules, the way they're written, it probably should be a week, yeah.
I'm going to sound a little bit like Gus Gould here, and I hate doing that because I always remember when Craig Wing had his shoulder broken and he was out for 16 weeks. Gus Gould's response to why no one should have been suspended to that was, well, if he doesn't hurt his shoulder, we're not talking about this, to which I've always thought, well, that's not a defense to murder. Well, if you say, if that person's not dead, we're not here talking about him shooting him 16 times. I think, unfortunately, the injury has to play a part because that's a risk you run. But there is a part of me that does want to say, you know, if Reece Walsh is playing this weekend, are we having this conversation?
No. If it's just a head clash and it's a HIA, there's no conversation to be had. It's only the fact that he broke his eye socket that this is a conversation.
So this is where I think it's a really interesting discussion because I think I think the two issues are combined with the Rapana Chanel Harris. What's his name again?
Chanel Harris DeVita.
Thank you. We'll be editing this part out. No, knowing me, I probably won't. But I think the two are related because for me, I was saying to you since those incidents is that I think the more they've tried to crack down on defenders not injuring attackers, I think has played more of a part in attackers getting themselves injured because you start playing when you're a ball carrier and you start playing with the mentality, well, I shouldn't have to worry about that guy hurting me because he's not allowed to hurt me.
Yeah.
You are a lot less cautious about the way you go about things. And I sort
you're
of
not
like...
You're not protecting your body. Like, that's the thing. If the rules were how they used to be, you know, even 5 years ago, Reece would be defending his body. Reece would know that a guy's going to rush up and try and smash him.
So, and we were having a really good chat with our friend Joe Frost, where I sort of said, for me, the way the rules are going now is that it'd be like driving without your seatbelt on, because you're saying, well, those other drivers aren't allowed to speed. So I don't need to wear my seatbelt anymore because they are not allowed to speed, so I can go about my business normally. But what we do know is that other cars do speed. They don't always follow the rules. So what you do is you wear your seatbelt just as that precaution, just because you're like, look.
And even if they are following the rules, there can still be an accident.
That's exactly right. But this is where it was a really interesting discussion with Joe, where it was sort of, so I want to ask you the question because I can't really remember where we landed on it. But for you, is an incidental head clash a case of two cars just driving at the same speed limit and they've done everything they can and unfortunately there's been an accident for whatever reason? Or do you consider an incidental head clash to be, no, he's put his head in a position where it shouldn't be. He's basically speeding. It's the defender's fault.
I'm going to be accused of getting splinters here, but to me, it's a case-by-case basis.
Correct.
As I said, the Finucane one is a cut-and-dried one because he charges out of the line and deliberately tries to smash him. Tago is on the line because he's not trying to smash him. He's just trying to pressure him.
But this is where it gets really interesting for me. The problem with the rules as they're currently stated is we actually don't have an answer.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
And Graham Annesley, who I, with every passing week, loathe more and more, all he does is create uncertainty because you've got the match review committee who are following the guidelines as they see him going, there's no charge. And he comes out 2 days later and says the MRC got it wrong. Now, whether or not the MRC got it wrong, A, that is not something that you should be letting us all know publicly for the first time. B, that is something you should be sorting out in-house and then at least letting the clubs and the players know, look, this is how we're going to be officiating it, instead of just coming out and throwing the MRC under the bus because you sort of see it differently. And this is now what's become the problem. They need to, this, the precedent's set now, that's fine. But leading up to it, there's been so much uncertainty where something's happened on the field and the ref's done something, that's wrong. So the MRC have come out and done something, that's wrong. And now you've got Annesley saying, well, this is what should have happened. There's too much uncertainty. You've got to set something in place from the get-go to say, this is how we're going to manage it. And regardless of if instances come along where it's, you know, not what you considered, that it's too late. This is how you go, so that players can go out there with a level of certainty in terms of how they're going to play the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that, the goalposts have now been changed 2 days out before the next round starts. So essentially by Annesley saying, so the next time that happens, we want a charge to happen. Well, now defenders are going to be in two minds. Do I come out of the line? Do I rush up? The standard way to defend that play in the modern game for the last 15 years has been up and in. You cut the time off. That's the only way to stop that play. Teams are so good at that spread with decoy runners. The only way to stop it properly is up and in, cutting off the time. So now teams are going to go, well, I can't rush in because if he runs into me, I'm getting suspended. And you've decided that 2 days out from the round four, like that's an off-season thing. That's not something you change mid-season.
And it's tough. I've actually got a lot of sympathy for players because players, when they're out on the field, I'm not saying that they're thinking at the highest level where they're, you know, they're operating at an IQ level of 170 when they're in the game. But, you know, when you're a player out on the field, you've got your pressure from your coach, you've got your pressure from the fans, you've got the pressure from your own teammates, you've got the pressure from yourself to perform. But now all of a sudden you've got the pressure from the NRL hovering over you in terms of how, like, that's a lot of things to be factoring in when you're racing up out of the line to try and shut down Reece Walsh, who, for all intents and purposes, last Thursday was the key player for the Brisbane Broncos, with Adam Reynolds out. I think the whole thing, as usual, has been handled poorly. I think based on the way they had been ruling on it, leading, I don't think that was a penalty or a suspension because, as I sort of said to Joe Frost, and Joe doesn't agree with me in this, which is fine. But if you look at everything, I agreed with the MRC. If you look at the way Taylan May approached that tackle, he did what we've asked him to do going into a tackle like that. You can't stop these things happening based on what we've told him to do. You couldn't suspend him. And I just feel like It's just so duplicitous now for Graham Annesley to come out and say, no, no, there'll be a suspension moving forward.
The stupid thing is now, Mark, with the whole bending the back thing, now they're actually putting the defender in danger. Because he's going to bend, put his head forward, and a big forward, like a big outside sort of, you know, 520-kilo edge back rower center is going to run over him and knock him knock his head the next week, which is way more dangerous.
Annesley is, he's really boiling my blood at the moment as well. I had a chat with you, I think, yesterday, where I said, I've got to make sure I talk about this on the pod. So the Daily Telegraph continue to do themselves no favour by trying to create controversy, particularly with the Penrith Panthers, where they can. I'll ask you there.
Why are they so anti-Penrith all of a sudden?
The Daily Telegraph are the quintessential tall poppy syndrome.
It's so weird, but because that's their market. Boken's from Western Sydney. They're the only people that buy their papers. The only one that's buying a Telegraph is a scaffolder from Penrith.
Yeah, but you see, people like to hate click on stuff. See, people like to pay to see. Like, did you hear Phil Rothfield? Phil was bagging our team today, and you sit there and you don't want to think, but eventually you snap and you go, I've got to know what he said. So that's where they get their clicks from. So. For the three listeners we've got, if any of you haven't been hearing about it, is the NRL now want to crack down. Oh no, sorry, the Daily Telegraph want the NRL to crack down on Mitch Kenny or any dummy half runner following the ball after they've passed it, which is now creating a pseudo blocker that used to be taking the place of the forwards. But, of course, Graham Annesley has now come out and said that there's nothing wrong with what the hooker's doing. And I, to no surprise whatsoever, fundamentally and wholeheartedly disagree with Graham Annesley's latest interpretation of play.
See, so we had this conversation yesterday, and then I agreed with you that I think he was deliberately doing as a blocker. But then I seen on Twitter everyone was going, well, no, that's natural. So what did I do today? Had some time to kill. I thought I'd go back and look at last year's grand final and see if he really does do that. He doesn't do that. He does sometimes. Like, he'll follow the ball sometimes. But not 90 times out of 100, he passes the ball and stands where he passed it from.
Because I think he's actually creating more we'll get out our geometry sets. But
he's a moving blocker. It's gone from a guy standing still to become a moving blocker.
No, granted. But what you've just said there is fundamental to this idea that, well, he's just following the natural movement of the ball. But a dummy half wouldn't do that. Because if you – what's the shortest distance between two points? Straight line.
Straight line, yep.
So there's no reason for him to move sideways if he knows that the ball is going to go forward at some point. He's going to stand his ground.
Sideways is the one place he's not going. He's either going forward knowing he's going to kick, or he's going back towards where the ball's going.
Correct. So this is absolutely a new tactic. But the reason my blood was absolutely boiling over this is that we have been told for the last one to two years that if someone makes a break and they then subsequently pass to one of their teammates, if the original ball carrier doesn't get out of the way, they are considered a blocker if they then interfere with the play with the person they pass the ball.
Yep.
So how is this any different?
Yeah,
this should be absolutely no different. You have got a dummy half. It doesn't matter how he got the ball. Once he's passed the ball and he's in front of the ball carrier, he is obstructing the ball carrier. It should absolutely be as simple as that. But no. Graham Annesley has had to come out again. And what's he done? Created more uncertainty in terms of how the blocking rule is going to be interpreted. And for fuck's sake, as if the blocking / obstruction rule isn't already complicated enough.
Yeah, and we get the idea that they want black and white in terms of running into defenders when you're a decoy. But, okay, so there you've then created another part of the blocking rule where it's completely open to interpretation. Like, I don't get it. Like, it just, they get themselves in knots. And I don't even blame the NRL. I don't blame Annesley for this. What I blame is the fact that the entire NRL listen to the Daily fucking Telegraph. and the Daily Telegraph write one dumb article and they get themselves in knots trying to appease idiots on NRL 360. It's just so It's so stupid. Essentially, and it's always been rugby league's problem. Rugby league is governed by the newspapers, and it's where we get ourselves in trouble.
It's definitely always been the game that's been played out almost entirely through the media. And yeah, it's just infuriating.
I remember talking to an old fella that I knew years and years ago, and he grew up in Sydney in the 60s and 70s. And he said rugby league was completely run by the media because at that time Sydney had 4 or 5 morning newspapers and another 3 or 4 afternoon newspapers, you know, afternoon editions. So he said, like, there was so much content to fill, they would just make up bullshit about rugby league. So rugby league just filled half the paper, especially in afternoon editions later in the week. And there was judiciary charges and stuff that were basically there because the paper had called for them just so they could fill content. And it's the same 50 years later.
You are listening to the Bay 53 podcast.
Mate, it's funny you should say that in terms of the content that they can create. I mean, from where we sort of sit at the moment, they don't need to be stirring up controversy, whether it be blocking plays or broken faces. I mean, Reece Walsh really is your headline act for the biggest story at the moment, which is the plague that seems to be hitting the NRL in terms of injuries. It's just an absolute... I'm reluctant to use this word. No, I won't use that word, actually. What is going on after 3 rounds of the... We've had some big outs over the last 24 hours since we've been recording. So Nathan Cleary is out for a month. Mitchell Moses is out for 10 weeks. Yeah, I think that'll be 10 weeks at best. Bryce Cartwright's out. Who else have they... I mean, the Broncos...
Bryce Cartwright got named today, but he won't play.
Yeah, Brendan Piacora's out for a month. For the Broncos, that's off the back of Payne Haas as well. We now know that he's going to be out for a lengthy stint. I think the more interesting one for me has probably been the Roosters losing Lindsay Collins and Sandon Smith. I thought that Sandon Smith played really well for them last week. There's some big injuries to come out of the weekend, mate. I mean, is this a trend or is this just unlucky? What's going on? What's happening in the NRL at the moment?
Well, it's interesting. Last year...
Oh, sorry, Tino. And I completely forgot.
The
big one. Tino ACL for the season.
To me, Tino changed the entire trajectory of the Origin series. Because he's the one guy in the Queensland forward pack that can play 80 minutes. Yeah. And they're able to rotate everybody else around Tino. But anyway, that's another point. But to me, it's... it's interesting because last year we had it. We don't think we had this many. We had quite a few last year, but everyone just said it was a World Cup year. Players got back late. They weren't ready, blah, blah, blah. That's not an excuse this time. But you also say, well, some are muscle injuries, you know, hamstrings, quads, that sort of stuff. Some are contact injuries, you know, you got broken ribs and teenagers and ACL. So I think it's just coincidence that they're all happening. Mm. But I also notice, you know, like, I was reading an article the other day about Premier League football, you know, how that's got its highest injury rate in the last 40-something years since they've been keeping records properly. And it seems to be like the modern athlete. And I don't know if it's the fragility of the modern athlete or it's the fact they're essentially like Formula One cars now. Formula One cars break compared to V8 supercars because they're so intricate and so finely tuned. And I wonder whether they got to the point now where athletes are so finely tuned, they break a lot easier.
I actually have a lot of sympathy for that perspective because I've sort of been wondering that for a while now, if only because, you know, I always think of Georgie Rose. He was always very quick to say, and he was probably the last player of his type that we're ever going to see, but he was always very quick to say, I'm not an athlete, I am a footy player. And he was always very clear about that in terms of the idea that he trained and ate and played like he was going to play rugby league. And when you think about Georgie Rose, for everything that he achieved, he didn't really get injured. Now, you know, he didn't hit the heights, but he played the game that he wanted to play and he got a fulfilling rugby league career out of it. So I absolutely have a lot of sympathy for this idea that we're potentially honing athletes that aren't built, you know, they're a bit like the orchid. They need the perfect conditions to really blossom.
I long for the day of a fat 5'8".
Hey, we haven't spoken. We didn't record after our round two game. I put my hand up. The coward that I am just couldn't face it. You had the courage to go back and watch the Cowboys loss. Full credit to you, Bretto. I haven't even thought about revisiting it. The one thing I'll say before I do hand it over to you is that I feel like we are finally getting closer to a like we are the closest we've ever been to a win up in Townsville under O'Brien. You know, last year we lost by two. We only lost by a point this year. We had to take, we at least took them to extra time. But that was, I said to you shortly after that game, I fear I have gravely overestimated what this team is capable of. There were a lot of concerning signs to come out of, I think, the full 80, not just the second half, the full 80 of that Cowboys game.
Yeah, it's an interesting game, that one, because as everyone knows, the Cowboys could not have played worse in the first half. And we just played solid footy. To me, I think, and Adam O'Brien's talked about it in multiple presses this year, about the Storm, the way the Storm went early in the season is they just don't beat themselves. So that's sort of how he's approached it. But I also think that it cost us the Cowboys game, and it almost cost us the weekend game, where when we're on top, we're not playing a natural style of footy. We're not, you know, reaming home the advantage. Because we, with the amount of ball we had in that first half in Townsville, we should have scored four tries, especially especially how much they turned over. But I don't think it's on the players. I mean, we're a bit clunky, but you're always clunky this stage of the year. But we're ultra conservative, you know. We were getting deliberately tackled in the corner on the fifth and attacking sets. You know, we're kicking early. All these things that just played into their hands, because we're always going to get tired. It's Townsville in March, you know. We can't compete with the Cowboys for 80 minutes in that, because they live in those conditions every day of the year. You know, they run up the hills, you know, in the North Queensland summer. Of course they were going to run them over the top of us. We had to take advantage and we didn't. And that's why I'm not overly – I was angry on the day and I was probably angry the next day. But watching it in the cold light of day and thinking about it, I was actually pretty impressed with the fact that I don't think we dropped our bundle. You know, the DSAF hit to get to turn the ball back over and then we score. You know, to me, that's a thing we wouldn't have done in the past. In the past, we would have completely folded. But we didn't. And, you know, as much as that two quick try got him back in the game and all that, and that was, you know, not ideal, we still ground out the entire second half. My concern from that game would be, for I think the third straight time, but certainly the second straight time, in Golden Point, the opposition has walked down the field in their first possession and kicked an easy field goal.
Mm.
To me, there's a real mental issue there. Like Penrith did it to us last year. Obviously, the Cowboys, we had the ball first, but, you know, did nothing with it. They walked straight back down and kicked the field goal. I'm pretty sure the one before that was the same. To me, that's the concern, that we get under that pressure situation. And I don't think we become soft, but I think we freeze. I think, you know, we sort of try to play super conservative when we have the ball, and then we, in defense, we're more worried about not giving away a penalty, so we get off too quick. It's Golden Point. They don't blow penalties unless you're a moron. I mean, we need to be smarter in those situations. And I will say that we got absolutely hosed, because when Greg Marju had the ball stolen off him, was a clear as day penalty. We should have been kicking 35 out in front to win the game.
So our good friend Harry Ramage actually was the one who highlighted that to us, and I got to be honest with you, I wish he hadn't, because
don't want to see it. Don't watch the replay, because we got hosed.
Yeah,
It was an awful decision. But the thing is, that's the decision referees don't blow. Yeah. That's what we need to be smart. We need to go. We can lay down in the tackle in Golden Point, because they're not going to blow a penalty.
It was a weird game. I mean, I sort of probably take too much time to look at those statistics that, you know, the big ones that sort of don't really mean much in the grand scheme of things. I did find it interesting in this game, though, that we ran all run meters. We ran more than the Cowboys. I mean, granted, only by 22 meters, but it really did feel like they were marching up the field much easier than we were. But it just shows how bad that first half was by the Cowboys, because the average set distance, we were getting 40 metres per set. The Cowboys finished with 32 for the game. And the other thing I found interesting as well was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, oh, they might not have that stat there, but I swear I could have seen a stat at one point where our average play the ball speed was quicker than theirs, and it didn't feel that way at all. We just felt lethargic, particularly. So it sort of feels like a lot of what happened in the first half has been lost by a lot of what happened in the second half, because my impression from the game afterwards was that the Cowboys were just god-awfully woeful in the first half and we were just holding our own, and we got exposed quite badly in the second half. But the statistics overall don't really paint that picture. It was infuriatingly frustrating game to watch. But I got to be honest with you, I now realize my frustration in watching that game wasn't watching that game in isolation. My brain is still stuck in 10 streak world of 2023. And I'm still comparing this team to that team. And I think what I've realized over the last 3 weeks is I, as much as I've been saying, we're not that team anymore, you know, we're really not that team anymore. This is a new season. We're doing new things. We've got to take each game as they come. We've got to start it all again. And I think the first 3 weeks have been a bit of a reminder to us as fans that enjoy last year for what it was, but it really is time to move on from it.
I'm reminded of the, you always see fans, and our fans have been especially vocal in this, you know, we were so good with the ball last year. Where's that gone? You know, like, what do we do at training? But a good friend, Harvey G, reminded, you know, when we run through our set play at the moment, it's like training. Because in training, obviously, you know, the defense is not coming up quick. You're not digging into the line as such. You're passing generally before the line because you're just going through the motions. Mm. And we're kind of still in that preseason running through your plays mode of we're passing well before the line, we're doing a little bit slowly, and that's stuff that builds into your season. So that's stuff that'll click. So when fans always say, oh, you know, what do they do at training, that's the problem. You do that at training, it's the ability to then turn it into the game situation, which I think is a bit what Jacko's has struggled with. He sort of seemed to be really going through that, you know, that robotic almost style that you do in training, going through your plays. And that'll come. That'll absolutely come. But to me, the biggest problem with this has been we haven't last year, especially that 10-game streak, we were really good at ramping the pace up when we had control of the game.
Yep.
So we had them by the throat. We would just go flat out and we'd be bang, bang, bang. There's three tries. Game over. This is what we haven't done this year, because that Cowboys game should have been dead and buried, and on Sunday night's game should have been the same. And that's something that I think will come, but if it doesn't, this is where this team is. You know, if we don't score 25 points, we're unlikely to be able to grind out too many of these 14-12 results.
Just quickly, because I do want to move on to something else, but just quickly before we do, I feel like I've lost all sort of objective sort of reason when it comes to when I do look at these stats. It's actually just dawning on me, if you look at our starting forward pack for that game against the Cowboys, obviously you take Phoenix out, they all ran for 100 metres or more. And I feel like that's something that's unfortunately been overlooked. I mean, Adam Elliott himself ran for 100. Leo Thompson, 135. Jacob Safidi, 136. I'm definitely looking at the right column. We've been very critical of our forward pack over the years for failing to get it. But I think we've just lost that realization that forwards running 100 metres is a big deal. And our forwards were doing the job. In fact, DSAF came on for 105. Jack Hetherington was 91. I think he might have gone off because he went off early with injury.
Yeah, the ankle, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought our forwards actually overall did a good job that day.
I'm no expert. I just love the game. But more than that, I love the community. If you're a fan of rugby league or the NRL, you'll love Big T's Tees. Unique, affordable, and made for fans. Find a link to the online store in the show notes below. you'd look good in one of Big T's tees.
I've been thinking about something a fair bit, definitely since the Cowboys game, and certainly up to during and very much after the Storm game itself. Mate, before we pressed record tonight, I asked you what you think from a coach's, you know, preparation, from a coach's perspective in terms of winning a premiership. I asked you to have a bit of thought about what you think is the number one key consideration when it comes to team preparation or coaching a team in the NRL. And I asked you to have a think about it, and I'm curious where you landed with that.
I think it's man management. I think it's the ability to extract. See, people talk about a guy like Craig Bell and his ability to extract out of players because he's a hard guy. See, but that's not the case. Everyone talks about Craig Bellamy away from the spotlight. Mm. He's a player's coach. The greatest coach of all time, Wayne Bennett, is not your great coach technically. I think there's a lot of coaches better than him. But he'll always win, Wade. And the Dolphins last year proved it. The Dolphins last year, roster last year was garbage. But Wayne extracted, you know, enough for, I think they finished 12th in the end, you know. Like, to me, it's mean management. And I think it was always AOB's weakness. He was a bit of a blood and thunder type coach. But I think last year, and maybe it was a situation off the field that he had going on that sort of calmed him a bit. But his man management improved a lot last year. And when you've got a squad of 30 players that all want to play, have all got niggling injuries, have all got issues outside the game, you don't need to have 17 good players every week, but to win, you probably need, you know, 13 or 14 guys, at least 90% of their peak. And it's the ability to draw that out week after week on the grind. And I go back to the famous Wayne Bennett quote of us in 2014, I don't know which team's getting off the bus.
Mm.
That to me, and that's a coach going, well, I have tried everything. You know, we've changed tactically. We've changed the lineup.
We've tried a different bus.
Yeah, is that right? I've tried everything, but I can't get it out of these players. And Wayne, as a guy that I've said today, man management is his biggest strength. He's just going, well, I can't change anything. If I can't get these guys to sing on the same hymn sheet as me, I can't do anything.
Oh, I think I think that is a brilliant answer. I think, funnily enough, I think that answer actually probably aligns a lot closer to where I sort of landed. Mate, I'm going to ask you to sort of sit tight as you were. Grab the popcorn. I think about the last time we won an NRL premiership. You know, so I went back to 2001. The way in 2001, we talk about how much the game has changed. So we talk about, you know, it was a different game back then. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that in terms of what that means. And what I've actually realized is that you even think back to 2001, not even just the way the game was played, the way players prepared, the way coaches sort of, you know, even just tactically, what we knew about medical science. But you think about the way, even as fans, we consumed the game back in 2001. I can't speak for everybody else listening to this, but I can tell you now, 2001, the way I sort of consumed the game was read a couple of papers over the weekend. I watched the game on the weekend. You know, I had a chat with a couple of mates about it, maybe on Monday, possibly still on Tuesday, but I didn't think about it again for days. The way the game, and this is obviously this goes for professional sport in general, we talk about it so much, but I don't think we actually appreciate anymore the existential difference that we actually have in the way we experience sport now. Rugby league now is a 24/7 experience. You look at you and I, Bretto, we're recording a podcast now. We're in a chat group where we talk about it all the time. You know, you think about the information that you can get about the NRL on the internet. You can look at what players were, you know, doing 5 years ago. You can track their entire history. You can go to the NRL website and you can see who's leading whatever statistical category you want. But it's even become more invasive than that because you've got players now who want to promote their character, we call it a brand, but them as a person, you can access them through social media now. But the reason I focused on that fan experience was we talk about so much in terms of the way clubs now analyze their players. But you think about the fan experience and how all encompassing it is. It's a whole other level now that we're actually not appreciating the way clubs monitor and manage and look after their players now. So I asked you before we came on air, what do you think is the most important thing? You've said man management. I take it a step further. I think in the modern game, the single most important aspect in getting a team ready to win a premiership, it's even more minute than man management, it's minutes management. I was listening to a soccer, and it was so funny that you actually mentioned.
I was just about to say, Liverpool pods are listening, the number one thing they ever talk about is minutes management.
So it was so funny to me when you were talking about the comparison with the Premier League. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about, you know, modern day sport is a long season now. And, you know, we even used to see it, you know, back in the day, it was 22 rounds. There were no buys. You had a top five, couple of finals, you know, so you were really looking at less than half the year. But of course, what we know about the modern game now, it's 7 to 8 months. Like, you think about how short the off season is. And what we as fans do is we look at the entire season. And then we think that we're looking at it short term in terms of looking, well, this is how many games we've got till this bye. This is how many games we've got here. You know, we divvy it up. I guarantee you, coaches now are looking at each game. They are looking at each game in 40-minute increments. And that is what they are focusing on from week to week. Granted, they're thinking about it in a broader scale, you know, I put it to you that minute management of our forwards is the single biggest consideration of that coaching staff every week. Because you think about the backs, you think about your halves, they have to play 80 minutes. So you just work on the base. We've got to get 80 minutes out of these players because that engine room in those forwards, they are everything. And we have to make sure that we have got those minutes managed down to the second to make sure that we are getting the maximum out of them. But I wanted to talk to you in terms of Adam O'Brien's tactics. I don't think I've cracked the Adam O'Brien code. And I think I may have big-brained this, but I want to talk it out with you. We're seeing too much for me that is similar this season to what we experienced last season for it to be a coincidence. And we did say, you and I did say, is that it's a long season, you know, let's get to June, see where we're at. But even I, after two rounds and zero wins, was boiling. I was like, how have we not won a game yet? I thought Adam O'Brien said something in the Cowboys post-game press conference, and I thought, we're back to Adzi, who's losing his mind. He just doesn't. And I was really happy that it didn't get picked up by the newspapers last week to add more pressure to him, you know, given that he dropped at Jackson Hastings. But he said it's performances like today that we're going to build on for the rest of the season. And I lost it. I really did start to think I have gotten this team and this guy so incredibly wrong that to say something like that after the ineptitude we just had to witness is bullshit. But I thought about what he had to say, and I thought about last season, and you and I said it was those three losses after the second bye that in the end, you know, painted a different picture because we were close. I think we had five wins, a draw, and six losses, which at that stage of the season isn't that bad. But it was those three losses to the Broncos, the Roosters, and the Panthers that painted the whole season. Suddenly we're down in 14th, and we're. But there's a part of me now that actually thinks that season almost played out exactly the way Adam O'Brien wanted it to. And I'm starting to see a pattern emerging here where you look at our first three games, he's not focusing on results. He's focusing on man and minutes management. And the first three games have all played out almost exactly the same way. A solid first half at a heightened intensity and a tapered second half to see if we can hold them out or at least if we can get something out of it at the end. I said to you last year when we beat the Storm, that game played out exactly how I thought it would. I promise you, the game we saw on Sunday night, it played out exactly how I thought I would. I thought maybe they'd want to get a third try, but once we kicked that goal and we went to a 14-point lead, I thought in my brain, they think that's enough to get this. Adam O'Brien's tactics are to get this team to a position where they're there or thereabouts at the midway point so that he can ramp us up again and take it home so that we can hit the best form at the end of the season. And I think we're going to see a lot more of these types of performances because he's realised if we want to compete like with Penrith, we cannot play like Penrith. We can't. We just can't do it. Not because we're not good enough, but we don't have the structures in place yet. So what he's trying to do is make sure that if we're going to beat Penrith when it matters, what can we do now to get us at the best stage that we can? So, yeah, you and I are a bit critical. Why is Dylan Lucas not picked today for next weekend? You know, why did they take Leo? I think they're seeing those as opportunities to manage the minutes of our forwards, because managing our forwards is everything in this game to being able to win a premiership at the end of the day.
Hmm. Yeah, I completely agree for starters. I completely agree. What I will say is it's a tactic. That is the idea. It's fraught with danger.
Oh, 100%. Now, because absolutely.
You're thinking, well, if we're 6-6 after 12 rounds, that's where you want to be. That's great. Then what if KP gets injured in round 13?
Yep.
Your season's dead because you haven't got enough wins in the bank already to the last while he's out. It's but I agree. Like I have no doubt at all that Adam O'Brien manages the minutes. I don't think either of the Twins play as many minutes as they could. I think he's realised that Adam Elliott is his workhorse. He's the guy that he can flog to death, and probably because we've got plenty of guys that can play his role. But no, I definitely don't.
Now, don't get me wrong. I want to be very clear about something. I don't think he got to 5-6 last year, and he went, well, I'm really happy with this. Because bear in mind, like we always said about that first half of the season, goal kicks and no KP. That was the. But you think about the game we won against the Storm on Sunday, strong first half, hold it in the second. That was the exact game plan that we had against the Panthers last year at home. But of course, what happened was is that, you know, Lachie Miller. I don't want to blame one player for it, and I know Tyson Gamble didn't have the but they are the exact same blue. They are the exact same game plan. But what happened was that we had a full strength team on Sunday, as opposed to one that was missing key players against the Panthers. And you know, I've heard some, and I disagree with a good friend of the pod, Harry Ramage, on this. I'm not guaranteeing you that we would have won on Sunday if Munster and Hughes were playing. But I don't think they blow us off the park. I think the way we defended on Sunday, we defended like a team that wanted to stay composed and stay in control and scramble only if you have to, as opposed to high intensity, just hit them hard every single tackle, because he's trying to play them in a manner where they're going to still be able to step up again later on in the season. And you're absolutely right. It is fraught with danger, but you've got to look at our squad. And you've got to look at our list, and you have to look at the players that we've got at the ready. We don't yet have pieces that we can just continuously drop in if someone gets hurt. So he has to take the risk that we'll scrape together enough seasons now before that wins before we step it up, because we can't be the Panthers where we can just drop a Jack Cogger in, or we can beat the Broncos without our best forward. We're not there yet, but what he is trying to do is create the structures now that we can replicate as we slowly build the club up and, you know, bring in a few more pieces so that we can repeat this and we don't have to worry about, we can, you know, focus a bit more on wins, but once we've got that proper depth there. So it is fraught with danger, but I think he's doing the best with what he's got at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. My worry about that idea, and I think what you say makes sense. You know, like it certainly adds up. The math certainly maths, but my issue with that is that if that's your case, you don't find your rhythm.
Yeah.
Like to me, this is the time of year where good teams build rhythm. They're nowhere near their best, but that, you know, whereas, you know, and it's not about who's in, actually in the team. It's about, it's going to sound weird, but it's about the vibe, you know. Mm. It's about just rolling through how you play. And no matter who's in, who's out, doesn't matter. We roll through how you play. And at the moment, I don't think we're playing how we should play. I think our strength is our attack. And, you know, and as much as, you know, we all want to defend better, you have to defend well to win premierships. I think we're much more likely to win games 24-20 than we are 10-8.
So it's funny you should say that, because that is the perfect segue into why I actually, that's the reason I actually do think Jackson Hastings got dropped. I think Jackson Hastings got dropped as much to go back and find his form, but I don't think it's been because of his failure in the second half to kick us on and strike. It's been because of an inability in that first half to take those opportunities when we have to lock that lead in, so that we can finish off the game. I actually think that's why he's been dropped. And I don't think he's been dropped as a punishment. I think he's been dropped because he said, go back to reserve grade and find your rhythm.
Yeah, he's gone back to reserve grade to find, to get the juices flowing.
Correct.
You know, just to find, you know, because he had 5 try assists on the weekend, and halfbacks are like basketball players. It's all about vision and touch with those guys. You know, it's all about what am I seeing? How are my hands doing the business? That's halfback play. And that's exactly what he'll do. You know, the pace will be slower, the gaps will be bigger. And yeah, it won't help him carve NRL teams up, but it does make him feel better about himself.
So that's actually why I think Jackson Hastings in the end had to be the fall guy, because you look at what our forwards have done over the first 3 weeks, they haven't done much wrong. And when you think about it, because you're right, the way, if I'm right, the way Adam O'Brien wants to coach this team and win a comp is fraught with danger, because he found out in the first game against the Raiders, one injury and we were fucked. Then subsequently Dylan Lucas went off as well, and the whole thing was, and you know, that scoreline blew out. But I think to a certain extent, until halftime, that game was probably playing out how he sort of envisaged again. I think this team is going to play a lot more of strong first half, you know, slower second half, hopefully grab about 5, 6, maybe 7 wins around that first or second bye. And we're going to see, like I said, we'll reassess again in June and see how they kick on. But the Storm game, mate, it played out.
Can I just say, if that's going to be the tactic every year, can they please include heart medications in the members pack?
Hey, mate. Fantastic occasion on Sunday night. And again, another huge shout out to the Newcastle faithful. I was nervous. I was nervous about the crowd going in on Sunday night. I thought 0-2, disappointment about, you know, people are going to hold on to them. Oh, it's a school night, Sunday night, got to get the kids for it. I was really proud of the Newcastle faithful. We had the second biggest crowd for the weekend, and we were the only team that didn't need South to bolster our home crowd figure. But 21,000 plus fans showed up. And this is what irritates me, is that a lot of people have already started downplaying the Knights' win. I thought it was a phenomenal win. I really thought they played with a composure and a discipline and a passion that I thought was perfectly encapsulated by the fury that Kalyn Ponga exhibited when Wishart went over for the late try. I was really proud of those boys on Sunday night. I thought they played the near perfect game to get us the result that they knew that they were after.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, like I said, you're right. The KP reaction to me was gold. Like it was
everything.
Like, yeah, absolutely. But we played like that in the second half. We played nervous. We played like we needed to win, you know. Watching it today and the focus on Adam O'Brien in the box of how nervous, like he did not sit down the entire second half.
Mm.
It's a funny thing, you know, like the Storm had us where they want us in regards to, yeah, they took players out, but we were under pressure, and the Storm thrive on that, because if you're nervous and want to grind it out, they'll grind it with you. You know, that's what they want. They want you playing nervous, slow, panicky football. And we didn't really get into that with them, you know. It was a grind about game, but there was nothing panicky, you know. There was nothing, even the times we kicked it out on the full, which was not ideal, but we just muscled up and defended the error, which is not what we're doing enough in the past, where will make errors like that, concede an early try, and the whole thing will fall apart. Mm. And the Storm, yeah, they were missing great players, but they've still got Harry Grant, the best hooker in the world, maybe Abby Corrissau, take your pick. And Pappy, you know, if you're nervous, Pappy's going to exploit you, because the second you take half a glimpse of where he's going, he's gone.
So this is really funny to me. This is actually really funny because it really does feel to me like the game people were watching on TV was different to the game I was watching at the ground. There was one player and one player only who I feared from the Storm on Sunday night, and it was Ryan Papenhuyzen. There was just something about every time he picked up the ball, he looked like he was ready to break. And when he scored that first try in the second half, there was a part of me that felt like it was coming. Now, it was disappointing in the end that it came off of Tom Jenkins' mistake, who, again, I thought, that's two games in a row. He's done what's been asked of him. I thought he had a perfectly reasonable game on Sunday night. But Papenhuyzen was the one player to me that I thought was going to break the game open at any point.
Is that a bit because he's the sort of guy that the crowd rises and panics when he gets to the ball?
Yeah, possibly.
So you feel that in the stand?
Yeah, possibly. He's a funny one as well, because he's not like Gutho, where he's all effort and no substance. Pappy's all effort and there's a lot of substance that generally follows it. So it might have been the anticipation of knowing what's come before. It's so funny what you say about the kicks out on the full as well by our halves. I felt so sorry for Jack Cogger on Sunday night, because he was in a no-win situation. If the team wins, they're like, well, that's what you're supposed to do. And if the team lose, they're like, well, Jackson Hastings had 5 try assists in Razzies, you know. So I sort of felt for him a little bit. But I thought he otherwise played, you know, fine. I thought he had a really interesting game.
I think the kicks on out of the full are a symptom that we have to put up with for our tactic. Our tactic is clearly kick the ball high and near the sideline. That's the tactic. And sometimes when you're trying to kick it within 5 metres of the sideline, you're going to kick it out sometimes. It's just reality.
No, that's exactly right. Bay 53 were pissing themselves laughing at me on the first kick out on the full. I said, after it left the boot, I'm like, yeah, see, that's better, as it went 2 metres over the sideline. But it was for exactly the reason you said then. I'm like, well, no, go for something. Try for that. Don't just lollipop it out on the full. You know, bomb it up. Let's see what sort of happens. I'm picking things out of midair as I think about them, because I don't want to forget about it. But I really want to make sure we spend a significant amount of our time talking about the wonderful return of Jaden Brayley. Mate, you and I particularly ate a significantly large serving of humble pie when it came to Phoenix Crossland and his place in this team and what he has to offer last year. So you know that I've come around to talking up Phoenix wherever I possibly can. Mate, I know we didn't score any points in the second half, and as I've sort of said, I'm not justifying it, but I think it was all part of the plan. But our dummy half speed was indescribably different when Jaden Brayley was out there. And I finally appreciated the difference between watching someone do their best at the role of hooker that they're not really familiar with, and someone doing their best at the role of hooker as if it's second nature. We really have missed Jaden Brayley. I think it's been so long since I've seen him really, you know, play substantially for us in a team that's going well. I probably didn't appreciate it. I thought he had a phenomenal return. I think he played, 30 minutes in the end. He got a really great cheer from the crowd. He got through a fair amount of effort. But just that slick delivery from dummy half that really did, funnily enough, speed us up a lot more. It was great to see him. But if I think minute management of our forwards is the number one consideration, KP's well-being is second, and I think Jaden Brayley's knees now is the third. They need to do everything they can to keep him healthy.
The hardest basic skill in rugby league is passing off the ground.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks it's easy, and it's not. And you try and do it, because you're essentially passing flat and hard without using your legs. Because all power in passing the ball comes through your hips and your thighs. When you're bending over, you're just using your back and your arms. And it's an incredibly difficult skill to learn. And anyone can do it and pop it up and throw it 5 or 10 meters. But only hookers, guys that have been doing it since they were children, have the ability to pull straight from the ground, throw it 15, 20 meters flat and to the guy on the chest. And it's amazing how, you know, Phoenix here did a great job last year, but he can't do that. Yeah, and you can't expect him to do that because that's not how he grew up playing rugby league. He grew up playing halfback, so he grew up passing both ways, but through his hips and his thighs.
In fact, I thought Phoenix probably had some of his better game time when he went off and had a rest, and then he came back on again for the end of the game, and you could see where that he really does add that utility value to this team because he comes on fresher than the rest of the field. So he suddenly adds that zip to our play.
To me, he's a great lock for the last 10 minutes. Yeah. I wouldn't want to play in lock earlier in the game, but the last 10 minutes when everyone's buggered, he's really good at lock because the big guys aren't running as fast as they were early in the game. You know, the game's not moving as fast, but he's still zipping around the middle of the field. It's really good in that regard. But back to Jaden, Andrew Johns always says, as great as Andrew Johns was, he was so great because Denny Medeiros was his hooker.
Mm.
One of the few guys in the history of rugby league that can throw a ball 25 metres off the ground flat. And Joey always says, I had so much more time because Benzie got me the ball in front fast. So I had an extra, you know, even 0.2, 0.3 of a second. To a guy like Joey, that's gold. And it's the same with a guy like KP. It probably doesn't go directly to KP, but he goes to the halfback, he gets it to KP, and the defense being a meter back is massive. I can't stress to you how much a meter is in time for a great player. It's unbelievable. And Jaden just gave it to us. You could see it. You could see Conger and Gamble just slightly. It was late in the game, so they were tired too. But they just sped it up. And a few times there, we rolled down the field really well because the whole attack was sped up. And whether that was bringing forwards onto the ball so they were hitting the advantage line better, or it was getting to the halfback and they were, you know, throwing their pass and they had the extra meter to wind up to the guy they're getting the ball to. A meter is so, so critical.
Mm. A couple of things are sort of bouncing around my head in terms of the game itself. I do want to make sure I give a special mention to our wingers. I thought Tom Jenkins, again, like I said, I thought he had a perfectly reasonable game. You know, we missed Greg, but we didn't miss him as much as I thought we would. But, mate, you know that I've developed a little bit of a fond sort of following for Inari Tuala this year, just given what he did show to the club in terms of how much he wanted to be a part of it, despite limited efforts in limited chances in first grade last year. So he comes back from a quad injury. And man, I'm shocked he came back after 2 weeks. A quad strain sucks. 191 metres and a try, defensively sound. You know, he was never going to be Dom Young. We never wanted him to be Dom Young. We just wanted to make sure that we didn't miss Dom Young so much that we were like, oh, we missed Dom Young. And I really think that he is going to provide us with that service this year. You know, he looks like a player that's playing with confidence in the team around him. And when you think about it, when we did that stat at the end of 2022, when we looked at how many combinations that poor guy had to have in terms of not only just his position between center and wing, but the players around him, he's playing now like a guy who's confident that he's in the team that he's around him, that he's a part of. And I think, you know, the first great appearances that he's had last year and now this year, he's really working into making that position his own, and I'm really loving what I'm seeing from him so far.
His ability to play multiple positions is understated because even on the weekend, he was playing on the left wing. Coming into the season, he was the right wing because Greg's the left winger. So he gets injured week one, he comes back. Jenkins, I assume, must be right side dominant of the right wing, so they've put Inari over the left. Didn't miss a beat. It's so valuable to have a guy that can play left wing, right wing, left center, right center, and you'll get, you know, within 5% of the same performance out of him. It's a real credit to him how well, I assume, he prepares for a game because he never gets called out. So there's a lot of when you're playing multiple positions like that, it's really easy to struggle in terms of your assignments. You know, if you're playing left center 1 week, the next week you're playing right wing, the assignments are so different that you've got 3 or 4 days preparation for each game that it's easy to make a mistake because you're not locked in. It's not second nature. And Inari was just like, okay, I've switched sides of the field. Nothing changes. I just do my job. And that's so valuable.
I'm going to give you the floor. I had a lot of the floor tonight. And I know you're really high on KPP at the moment, but you were watching him real closely on Sunday night. And I haven't seen you this excited since KP the first. But KP squared, he's creating a level of excitement in you about what we have here that's almost unprecedented, particularly for a back rower. I mean, I probably haven't been this excited about a back rower in a Newcastle Knights jersey since Ben Kennedy, and we all know what he went on to sort of achieve. But KPP was the play. Let me say, Will Price is following the path we thought KPP was going to follow, but KPP has come straight into first grade. And he's looked like, well, how did you ever doubt him? He's having an incredible start to his NRL career.
The first thing is, I thought there'd be zero chance he could play 80 minutes this year. He's playing 80 minutes in the first couple of weeks. It wasn't the fact that I didn't think he was athletic enough, or he had one NRL offseason, which is a huge step from the Super League one. He missed half of that because he had to get the toe surgery. So I thought, well, he's behind the eight ball, Back end of the year, maybe, get plenty of 80-minute runs in reserve grade. Back end of the year, he might be ready to go. But he's playing 80 minutes already and playing it easily. He's not, I'm sure he's tired, but he's not looking tired. He's not falling off tackles late because he's tired. He's making 30, 40 tackles a game in the bit of a game that's not suited to him because he's an athlete, he's got the levers, the speed, all the things that you sort of have the Sonny Bill comparisons about him in terms of athletically are all about attack. But his defense is outstanding. He doesn't make mistakes. He just doesn't, I'm sure teams go, well, look at that guy over there. We don't know who he is. No one's seen him play. Let's target him. And he doesn't fall for it. Like he does his assignment. He does the job. He talks really well. That's the thing I really noticed. Well, I was most surprised about, because a lot of guys will come to the NRL and not be confident enough to talk. He talks really well, which is quite a thing. He's obviously got a lot of confidence in himself, as he should. But the other side to it is the attack. I'm excited about it because I've never seen an athlete like him play for the Newcastle Knights. Wow. He may be the best athlete that's ever played for our club. Like, the things he can do physically, I've never seen a Knights player do. Because the ability to hold the ball in one hand, like the orange, you hear about, he does it. We don't help him. No one's running off his hip. But eventually that'll happen. Eventually someone will realize, hey, that guy, you can pass the ball. Let's run off him. And we'll score so many tries like it. But it's if you get a chance to watch a game on the TV, watch a replay where you sort of can concentrate on him. Just watch his ability to half beat a player. So a guy will come in to make a tackle on him, and it'll look like a standard sort of tackle. He'll go to the ground, but he'll just half beat him enough where he always half pops out the other side. And that's because he's got an athletic ability, but he's got the mind to go with it. He understands how to use his athletic ability, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
He sort of thinks, well, this guy's going to tackle me on the left shoulder. I've got the ability to swerve slightly to the other side, and that'll get me enough through where either my arm can come free or I'll get on my belly. And he does it time after time after time. And when we get that into our attack, and I'm sure AAB at the moment is just letting him do his thing, but when that sort of gets woven into how we attack down the left side, my goodness, like Tim with KP off his hip, with Brady off KP's hip, Jesus Christ. Wow.
You know what impressed me the most about KPP against the Storm was that 145 metres run. So he was our most metres run by a forward. And the reason that impresses me isn't because, well, that's just a big number and good for him. In a game of that significance against an opponent of that quality in front of a crowd of that size, he stepped up. And I'm not saying that, I'm certainly not going to sit here and say well, you know, the Super League quality has always been questionable, and you're never sure. But what I was concerned about with KPP was that he'd come to the Australian game and just try and do what he's already done and make it work here. But what he's doing is he's playing like a professional who's playing the best NRL game that he can, and it's better than most. And that is an incredible thing to see from someone who's into his third game of the NRL. It's funny what you say. And look, I'm not going to tinfoil hat it so much to say, well, this is Super Coach at its best. But I must admit, there has been a part of me that has been wondering, with the KPP offload that we know is coming, there has been a part of me, though, that has been wondering if we're keeping that, if we're keeping our powder dry on that one. Like, why start signposting these offloads that we're going to do in the first few rounds when we can keep that up our sleeve and surprise that with teams at the back end of the season? I'm not saying that that's why they're doing it. I'd say the reason's more is that we're playing safe footy now. We know we've got that. Let's use that when we need to, and it might not, where they might be trying to build into that.
He's definitely told not to force it.
Oh, yeah.
There's times there where there has been a bit of a pass on and he hasn't thrown it. And so he's definitely been told by the coaching staff not to force it. And so I think as he gains the trust of everybody, that'll be, more open.
And that, to me, is the highlight of his maturity, is that you do see players come in and say, well, I'm just going to start throwing it around like I used to. And you're absolutely right. He's clearly been told, yeah, you don't do that. And he's been able to adapt to that and go, okay. And he's one of our star performers, you know, over the first few weeks. So really exciting stuff to see from him so far.
And please, Lord, lock him down. Let's get him signed up for 5 years.
Well, yeah, we've got him for 2 years. But I think the good thing now, because there's been a bit of chat from good friend of the pod, Harvey G, is that we don't want another Dom Young. But I think the difference this time is that Dom Young was never on great money with us. KPP's, I mean, we were just in private a little bit concerned about the money we'd spend. There's something about players with you come to Newcastle with the initials KMP where we get concerned about the money we've given to them. But so far, so good. He seems to be living up to the amount that we're paying him. But he's on a good deal already. So at least we know, you know, he knows that we're keen to look after him if we can.
Yeah, no one's going to come in and offer him big money. He's going to go, well, there you go. There's, you know, I can make up for all that money that I didn't get from the Knights, because the Knights are going to give him good money. I mean, I think, I imagine he's probably on, you know, 500, 550. Even now, he's probably only worth 600. So he's on his money.
Mate, it would be remiss of me to talk about Sunday. We mentioned it in passing. The New South Wales Cup win over the North Sydney Bears, I mean, it got a lot more attention because of Jackson Hastings, who had a phenomenal professional game on Sunday. Was he the difference? I don't want to do a disservice to the rest of the team, but having said that, I think he was responsible for the reason why we put 50 on last year's New South Wales Cup grand finalists. But I want to talk to you a bit about Will Price as well, because you had very, and I mean very significant concerns about Will when you saw him after his first New South Wales Cup game. Mate, I don't know what happened to him since that game, but I can tell you now he is playing with an authority, a direction, and with just a plan of attack that is far more decisive than anything he may have been doing in that first round. He was kicking goals from everywhere. He was taking on the line. His passing was crisp, and you could tell that he was a guy who was just having the time of his life playing outside a first grade halfback in Jackson Hastings.
Yeah, that's the key. You've got Jacko there. He's got a guy there that, you know, that I'm sure Jacko put him in the line, just said, you know, these are your assignments, run here, run there, I'll get you the ball, you don't need to organise, you don't need to do anything, just do what you do, which is run the football, and he was great. The problem I had with him in week one, I had a problem with his defence, but, you know, we knew that. Like, he wasn't a great defender in the Super League, he was always going to struggle in defence for a while out here. That's not any news. The issue I had, he was trying too hard. He was running around in circles. Mm. He was slow because he was trying to do it all. Mm. But obviously with Jacko with the team, that's not a thing. Because I guarantee you now, if he was trying to do Jacko on the field, Jacko would have given him a spray and Ronnie would have hooked him.
Dave Armstrong had a really good game as well. So he seems to be have recovered from that first round sort of, you know, the team didn't really play the best in general. And I thought the forwards got some really good roll on at times as well. So I thought the signs were really good from our cup team on Sunday. You know, we've basically ended the Bears season. Do you win New South Wales Cup premierships after you've had put 50 put on you, or is that just in the NRL? Anyway, yeah, I thought there was a lot to like about it, and just put the crowd in a generally good mood for the Storm game. So yeah, but no, credit to the New South Wales Cup boys. I thought they played well.
Congratulations, Uncle Ron, his first win with the men's part of the Knights.
Absolutely.
Down the blind, Andrew John. Inside for Albert. Albert will score. Albert will score. Newcastle have won the grand final.
We've got a team list in front of us for the big game against the Warriors on Sunday. 11th plays 13th. I think it's at Go Media Stadium out at Auckland. I don't know. I sort of... We don't have a good record when it comes to travelling overseas and up north. So, you know, I don't think you could really tip the Knights with much confidence. But can I say this? There's a part of me that hopes the Knights go over there saying, hey, let's do to the Warriors what the Raiders did to us earlier this year. Let's go over there with a point to prove to say, hey, that finals win was an aberration. And, yeah, just use that as extra motivation to, you know, carry on from that first win of the season, prove a point to everybody about how we play against the Warriors. And I'm just hoping that that's the team that shows up on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, if we can get them into a grind, I think we can certainly beat them. But, you know, and the concern for me is their forward pack. Like, I'm really worried about AFB up front, especially without Leo being in the side. SJ has done a great start of the year. I think that's been why the Warriors have struggled a bit. I think SJ's done a slow start to this year, but their forward pack's been great. Typical, but they get so many injuries at fullback, they have to put our RTS back at fullback. Freaking typical. And he's obviously a danger, you know. But hopefully SJ continues his mediocre, let's say, form. And as I said, I think if we can get him on grind with him, I think we can certainly beat him.
No Leo Thompson. They did. The Knights did take the early plea for his foul on Ryan Pappenhausen. And I mean, again, I think the Leo takeout of Pappenhausen is less, like, he has absolutely been punished because Pappy landed on his head, not because of anything he specifically did. Because I think what Leo does is nowhere near as bad as what Rapana did to CHT. And I'm not saying what Rapana did was necessarily bad, but everybody seems to have reached for this idea that, well, because Leo didn't jump, it's more dangerous. And I'm like, no, he doesn't jump because he's a forward. And he's clearly just looking at the ball to make sure that he's running into a spot where he can be in contention for the ball. He's not running there looking away so that he can take out...
Doing what he got told to do, follow the ball.
But anyway, the Knights have sort of smartly, but they've decided it's worth taking a week.
You can't beat them. You never beat those sort of challenges. Yeah. You get done, and then all you do is lose another week.
Yeah. So, but I think the more interesting sort of selection for this is Jaden's still on the bench. He's still coming in at number 14. Obviously, they want to give him a bit more time. I think, though, the selection query that I have is Brody Jones in ahead of Dylan Lucas and Jed Carr.
Let's be fair, Egan. It's a ridiculous selection.
So can I say this? The reason I'm actually the most surprised about it is, I've got to be honest with you, I was watching Brody on Sunday particular, and he was at lock. And I was actually watching him thinking to myself, he's really disappointing for a first grader who's, you know, you look at the way Jackson's playing as a first grader in reserve grade, but Brody just didn't really seem to be taking the bull by the horns as a first grader in reserve grade. So that's actually the reason I'm mainly surprised by his selection, is that there was nothing I saw on Sunday that warranted his selection over Jed Cartwright. In fact, Jed Cartwright had a great game. There may be some issues with his knee, though. He did come off injured at the end of that game.
He's in the cup team.
So I'm curious to see what the thinking is behind Brody Jones. I don't know if there'll be a late switch there, but I feel it's a bit rough on Dylan Lucas. I don't think he's done too much wrong in first grade this year, where he shouldn't be at least an automatic first 17 player.
Our bench really worries me. Really, really worries me. Like, there's no punch on it.
It's very mobile.
We've got Heather, you know, and Heather does Heather things, but there's no punch. Like, the Warriors bench will keep rolling. AFB Tohu will play, you know, 70 minutes each. So, you know, you're not like you're getting a rest when they're off the field. I really, really worry that middle period of the game when our bench is on the field.
So, Matt Croker, he still is the player that's the most.
He doesn't play enough. He's played 10 or 15 minutes for 2 years now. It's ruined his career. He cannot develop playing 10 or 15 minutes every week. And that's all he's done for 2 years now. He needs to play cup. He needs to play 50, 60 minutes in the middle in cup for half a year. Like, it's just, it's not fair on him.
It was funny watching him play on Sunday. He put in a performance like that feather at the beginning of Forrest Gump, where he was just sort of floating around all over the place and just excited to be there. But he didn't really have any control over anything, and he was just going wherever the game sort of took him. I don't know what's going on with Croaks at the moment. But
the thing with Croaks is I don't know why Croaks is on the field when Adam Elliott's on the field. Because to me, Croaks' role in that team could be Adam Elliott. He can be your link man at the back of the scrum, clean up in defence, you know, has little effect with the ball in terms of like running the ball, but he can do all the other things. I don't see the point of having him at prop with Adam Elliott on the field too. Like, he gives us nothing in terms of punch in the middle.
So the reserve/replacements are Dylan Lucas, Jed Cartwright, Thomas Cant, Will Price, and Jackson Hastings. I mean, do you see any of those five players as potential late switches to come into the team for Sunday?
AOB does love a last minute switch, but I don't think so. No.
I mean, we're up against it. You actually, funnily enough, pointed out a couple of really interesting statistics about going to Townsville after a break and then winning after Townsville with a shortened break. And funnily enough, we've defied the odds in both instances, where we were less likely to lose in Townsville and we managed to do it. We were less likely to win after Townsville and we managed to win. So, I mean, we played late on Sunday night. The Warriors have got a couple more days rest over us. You know, we've got another sort of overseas trip, but at least we've got 7 days this time as opposed to 6 days after 90 minutes of rugby league. I give us a chance, but yeah, I think my concern is that it's in the forwards where they've probably got it over us. And to a certain extent, you know, their backs as well. I mean, Rocco Berry's having a great season. Montoya and DWZ, they know how to find the try line. And as you said, I don't think RTS is a centre. He's playing at fullback, and this might be the game that releases him. It's a tough assignment.
The other thing I noticed was Adam Pompey in for his first game of the year. Remember the bath he gave Brody last year? I did notice that. I wonder, is that deliberate? Are they deliberately put Adam Pompey in just to give Brody nightmares? Because, geez, he gave you an absolute bath last year.
Well, can I say this? You know, Brady's coming in off the form. I thought he had a phenomenal game on Sunday. And actually, you and I were sort of discussing in private that, you know, there was a lot about him where I thought he was replicating more those really tough carries that you see from Taylan May and Isaac Tungo for Penrith. You could tell he wanted to get his hands dirty a little bit and give those. And I think he ran for about 130 metres in the end. So I don't think if there's anybody getting a bath on Sunday, it's not going to be Bradman Best. I think he's Origin caliber, you know, hardened centre. Bradman Best is going to. Maybe he's got a bit of a point to prove as well. So, look, it's a tough assignment on Sunday. I'm probably going to be a bit like AOB. I hope it's another performance where, regardless of the outcome, it's a performance that we can build the rest of the season on. But I'm not overly confident going into the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give us, you know, maybe a 20% chance of getting the result. The thing is, I think we need to win two of the next three. Means after 6 rounds, we're 3-3.
And you take that. given the way we started, you take
absolutely that. Absolutely. Before the season, I was able to be 4-2 at that point, but after the terrible start, 3-3 would be a great result.
I think that might be a good point to wrap it up there, mate. We've been, as usual, talking. I mean, there's always something to talk about with the Newcastle Knights, and I must admit, it is always much nicer to be talking about them after a win. But yeah, I think we might wrap it up there, unless you've got any final thoughts, Bretto.
No, mate. I will just say that the lower grades are going really well. The obviously lower both league and cup one. The junior teams are all there in around the sort of finals area with their last round coming up. So the whole club's going pretty well at the moment.
It's a great time to be. Great time to be alive. Great time for Newcastle. Great time for the world. Hey, thanks for listening right to the end. As usual, everybody, we do appreciate every single listen that we get. Sometimes we even get more than three. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the footy. And we will see you all on the socials.
Thanks, guys.
Sports Best Friends would like to thank you for listening right to the end. You are our kind of people. Find other great sports podcasts in our family by subscribing. And remember, social media isn't a bad place. You just need to follow the right people.